International Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
Hello, my name is Arthur Caraglia. I'm in charge of running the Secretariat of the Asset Management and Investors Council of ICMA. I'm here again this week with our chairman, Robert Parker, to analyze the recent developments on the markets in the context of the COVID-19 crisis. So last week, Bob, you mentioned the Franco-German initiative to launch a EU recovery fund. Now the Commission is actually proposing the legal instrument to launch it. What does it mean for the markets, and what does it mean for other member states that might have different views on how this should be handled?
Well, where we stand at the moment is we have three proposals. As you mentioned, last week we had the proposal from Mr. Macron and Mrs. Merkel for a 500 billion euro recovery fund. And there were two features of that fund. First of all, that the fund would be dispersed in the form of grants to countries which had been adversely affected by the coronavirus. And secondly, that the fund would be raised with the European Union issuing bonds in the marketplace. So that was proposal number one. Proposal number two was a counter proposal from four countries, Austria, the Netherlands, Denmark, and Sweden, who opposed the idea of grants, and they counter-proposed a two-year fund, which would then be dispersed in the form of loans. And then the third proposal has come from the European Union Commission, which is a 750 billion fund, and that 750 billion would be 500 billion to be dispersed in grants, i.e. exactly what the Franco-German proposal was, and then 250 billion to be dispersed in the form of loans. The 750 billion total would be raised by borrowing on the capital markets. The European Union has come out with very precise proposals for how the grants would be dispersed. So, for example, they mention a number of 81.8 billion to be allocated to Italy, 77.3 billion to be allocated to Spain, and then 39 billion to be allocated to France, and then smaller amounts for other countries. So as at today, we have three proposals on the table. The obvious question is, well, how will this get resolved, and what is the market reaction? I think the market reaction so far has been reasonably positive. And you know, that market reaction can be seen in three areas. First of all, that the euro has strengthened against the US dollar. So the euro has now moved back through 1.10 against the US dollar. Second reaction has been the narrowing of spreads within eurozone government bond markets. So the spread between Italy and 10-year bunds, for example, has come in quite sharply, reflecting investors' views that there is going to be less financial pressure on Italy, and for that matter, other countries which could be under pressure. And then this clearly, if the proposal from the EU Commission goes ahead, clearly it is a positive factor for European economies and European corporate earnings, and that in turn is reflected in European equity markets being supported. Now, the obvious question is, well, will it be decided quickly, and will there be any amendments? And you know, clearly, given the opposition from countries like Austria, Netherlands, and the two Scandinavian countries, there may be some amendments. But my own view is that those amendments would be fairly minor. So I do think we will get a larger than initially forecast fund. I do think it will be a mixture of grants and loans. And importantly, I think for countries which are making major contributions, such as Germany, that their liability essentially will be weighted by the size of the economy. So that Mrs. Merkel politically in Germany can say that Germany's commitment does have a firm limit, and it is not an unlimited source of money from Germany to other EU countries. So I think that this probably will proceed. Whether it has to be agreed by all 27 countries, that may take another 2 to 3 weeks. But I do think that although the fact that we have three proposals on the table may be somewhat confusing, I think we are edging our way towards a final resolution, and that would be a positive factor for investors.
Could the markets be disappointed if in the end there would be more a larger proportion of loans versus grants? Or would grants be more like market friendly, let's say? Or they seem to come with some constraints, as you said, the grants as well. So what's the most efficient way to do this in your view and in the market's view?
Well, I think the obvious point to make is that if the proportion of loans is increased from the current EU Commission proposal, I think the market reaction would be negative, because if we just take Italy as an example, Italy has 2.5 trillion approximately of government debt. A significant amount of that debt has to be refinanced over the next 2 to 3 years. The Italian budget deficit this year will be well above 10% of GDP, and debt to GDP is heading towards 160% by probably the end of the third quarter of this year, against a background of, you know, the Italian economy underperforming most other economies in Europe over the last 6 months to 1 year. So the debt metrics for Italy don't look encouraging. And therefore, if more money can be given to Italy in the form of grants rather than in the form of loans, I think that will keep Italian debt spreads reasonably narrow and minimizes the risk of Italian capital markets experiencing higher borrowing costs, which would compound the problems of that debt profile for Italy.
And still at European level, is it the recovery fund up to the challenge? And I know it's a very difficult question, obviously. And maybe part of the answer is to assess the evidence of an economic recovery at EU level. What does it look like at this stage?
Well, I think the data that we had for March and April was very clear. It showed that all EU economies went into a sharp shock, with both demand and activity data showing a very significant downturn. The data for May so far is starting to show that the Eurozone economies are forming a base. Now, the data, for example, the purchasing managers' indicators are still in recession territory, but the May figures are less bad than what we saw for April. And I stick to my view that given the impact of this significant monetary expansion and the fiscal measures, not just at EU level, but also at national level, which we have been discussing, then I think that we will start to see, particularly as the coronavirus lockdown restrictions are being eased in most countries. So I think a combination of that lockdown being eased, monetary action, fiscal action, then the data going into probably the second half of June and certainly in July will start to see a recovery in the European Union economies. Now, having said that, you know, there is this big debate about whether the recovery will be very rapid, how fast the recovery will be. And I think that there is scope for disappointment here, because I think consumers are going to take time to reduce their borrowings, to rebuild their savings, and for consumer confidence to recover. And likewise for business confidence. And yes, factories may be reopened, economic activity is restarting, but I think that businesses and investors will be slow to build up new investment programs. So that's why I may think the recovery will take place. Yes, the economies are forming a base, but I think that an accelerated rapid recovery is probably the unlikely to occur.
Do you think the market is a bit ahead of itself? Because it seems that there's been a move to cyclicals. When you look at equity, there's been a strong bounce back from auto manufacturers and cyclical values, essentially, and maybe some sectors linked to tourism as well. Is it something that will be short-lived, or is it something that, you know, the market is anticipating not for the next 6 months, but maybe for the next 2 years? And did really essentially disregard a bit the shape of this recovery for the specific sectors?
The pattern in global equity markets, I think, has been reasonably clear, which is that global equity markets formed a base during the last week of March, and then throughout April, And although May has seen some increase in volatility, the rally that we saw in equity markets in April has been sustained in May. The pattern of investor behaviour has changed somewhat in that the rally in April was very much focused on sectors which could survive the coronavirus. So sectors such as IT, telecoms, elements of utilities, and also the healthcare sector. So those were the clear leaders in equity markets during the month of April. Now, that leadership by those sectors in May and more recently has now broadened out. And as you mentioned, investors are now looking at sectors which have been very oversold and which were very vulnerable to the coronavirus and which will recover in the second half of this year. Obviously, a number of sectors have also seen very strong government assistance. And in most countries, we have seen, at least in Europe, assistance for the airlines, assistance for the auto industry. And that's against a background of the valuations of those companies being very heavily sold off in March and not really recovering in April, but more recently with investor cash flows going into that. So I think the conclusion is that the equity market recovery, which started in late March, but which was very concentrated in April, has now very much broadened out.
And what about the credit rally? Could it be also sustained?
Well, I think in credit markets, the support for the investment grade market, I think, is very clear. You know, the cautious element of investment portfolios has attracted very strong cash flows from investors into investment grade bonds. And that's against a background of very heavy new issuance, because many companies have been trying to raise liquidity, improve the strength of their balance sheets by raising investment grade or issuing investment grade bonds. So that rally, I think, can continue. Strong investor demand. And of course, you know, whether it's the Federal Reserve or the European Central Bank, the investment grade corporate bond markets are backstopped by central bank purchases. So there, I think that the risk of a major sell-off in the investment grade market is low. In the high yield market and in the leveraged loan market, I do think there are potential problems. Moody's recently produced a report which forecasts that high yield default rates could rise as high as 14% in the first quarter of next year. And that's against a background of high yield default rates being less than 3% at the beginning of this year. So I think investors feel that risk reward in investment grade is satisfactory for the low risk part of their portfolios. And there has been, I think, some clear switch out of government bonds into investment grade bonds. But the amount of money going into high yield bonds, I think, will continue to be relatively slow with poor liquidity conditions against a background of certain sectors seeing higher default rates.
There are maybe two important potential events that may be derailing the rally in the credit and the equity market, namely the Brexit talks collapsing potentially, and of course the raising tension between the US and China. What is your take on this? Is that something that needs to be taken extremely seriously by investors, and it's likely to happen at a moment of time, at a moment where the markets are already quite vulnerable? Is that something that we should be concerned about?
I think the situation on the Brexit talks, which restart during early June, and there is supposed to be this summit meeting at the end of June to decide whether there will be an extension to the transition period or not. The news coming out of the Brexit negotiations recently, frankly, has been very disappointing. And, you know, you've had both sides, the EU and the UK, making a number of actually not very helpful comments about each other. And it's almost as though a stalemate has been reached over a number of issues, you know, whether it be labour law, whether it be state subsidies, whether it be environmental issues, fishing, and also the vexed issue of the Northern Irish border. Now, there is one very fundamental problem, which is that if the UK decides to basically just cancel the negotiations and therefore revert to WTO rules, that would result in a hard border, and hard defined as a border which is subject to the whole range of customs checks between Northern Ireland and Ireland. And if that hard border occurred, that would be in violation of a number of treaties on the relationship between Northern Ireland and Ireland. So that really is almost a sort of catch-22 and an unresolvable issue. So my own view is that probably there will be some progress made on the Brexit negotiations in June. I don't think that any major resolution, however, is going to be achieved towards the end of the year. And although the EU does not want to have agreements covered for specific sectors, I think inevitably we are probably going to go down that road. So I think you could have an agreement on the financial sector, and arguably that's almost in place. I think you could have a number of agreements on trading in foreign exchange and securities, for example. I think you could have agreements on free trade. But there are going to be other areas where, frankly, they may just agree to delay an agreement. So rather like we have between the US and China, a phase one agreement, you could have a phase one UK-EU agreement, and then sort of further negotiations going on for a period of years until you get a comprehensive agreement. And let's not forget that if you look at the EU free trade agreements with other countries, you know, whether it be Canada, whether it be Japan, these agreements have all taken many years to complete. And I think everybody is being somewhat naive if they think that a free trade agreement between the UK and the EU can be achieved in weeks, not years. You mentioned the US and China. Obviously, the rhetoric from America has been ramped up. That has been primarily from President Trump. The thing that is actually somewhat confusing is that the negotiations, the continuing discussion on the trade agreement between the Chinese negotiating team and the US negotiating team, actually those discussions actually have been quite positive. So I think that the chance of the free trade agreement being reversed for phase one is low. However, I think any discussion for a phase two is going to be delayed. And let's not forget that the US administration has increased its restrictions on the activities of a number of Chinese companies in the US, such as Huawei. And in addition, the Trump administration is discouraging certain state pension funds or federal pension funds from investing in China. And also there are increased restrictions on Chinese companies listing on American stock exchanges. So the rhetoric remains unhelpful. Since it's the presidential year, and since it looks as though this is going to be a difficult election, I do think that there is a risk that the rhetoric gets bad. So I think both in terms of Brexit and the US-China relationship, these are not positive factors and may not turn out positively. And I think it will be a source of concern. So I think the conclusion is that after this very strong broader rally that we've had, and there's a very clear rationale for the credit rally and the equity market rally, there is a risk that going into later in June and July, that an overvalued market starts to see some profit take.
Well, thank you, Bob. That was extremely clear. We'll be paying close attention to what's happening next week, and we'll report back in the podcast format. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being with us today, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this ICMA podcast. For more podcasts and more information about capital markets, check out our website, icmagroup.org.